The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Donal Kavanagh with you until 12 noon today. Lots to talk about on the programme this morning. But as ever, at the absolute core of this show are your views, your perceptions and your take on the issues of the day. Get in touch with us, please. You can text us or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000. You can call us 074 91 25000. You can also use social media. We're at Highland Radio on X. We're Highland Hub on Facebook. If you do choose to call, Caroline's taking your calls and producing today. Shannon taking your calls on the programme as well. You can email us at comments@highlandradio.com. And you can also use other forms of social media. We are broadcasting live, of course, online. You can watch us on YouTube. Highland Radio Ireland is the name of the channel. You can also follow the show as it unfolds on our Facebook pages, Highland Radio News and Sport and Highland Radio. And on those, of course, you'll be able to see any Zoom conversations or in-studio conversations. You'll be able to see our guests. As I always say, the downside is you also get to see me. But you can live with that, I think. But it's always an interesting way to watch how the show unfolds. And you can engage with us there as well. So lots of ways to engage, lots of ways to experience the show. And we hope you have a fulfilling number of hours and that we hit the issues that you want to see. And if we're not hitting them, well, give us a call and let us know. Let's look at the papers on this Wednesday morning. And we start with the Finn Valley Voice this morning. Bring positive discrimination to 10T and A5, says NWRT. The Northwestern Regional Assembly, which represents Connacht and the border counties, is demanding a positive discrimination policy for transport infrastructure in the region. The director, Dennis Kelly, has listed the 10T and A5 projects, both of them vital to the Finn Valley, among his top three positive discrimination projects. And we believe that the Cabinet may have been discussing the 10T this week. Certainly the Cabinet having its final meetings before breaking for the summer, and the 10T, we have been told, is going before Cabinet before the summer recess. I'm not sure if they discussed it yesterday or what the situation is, but we certainly look forward to seeing what Cabinet has to say about the 10T, and we're hoping to get some sort of indications sooner rather than later. Looking at the Irish Independent this morning, a state too reliant on tax from high earners is the main story on the outside. Looking inside the paper, one of the stories that's really been a talking point over the past while, a state set to guarantee a €725 million euro RTE bailout for the next 3 years. You'll have heard the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, on the news there with Michaela, talking about the need for a 3 year programme to fund RTE. He made the point the health service doesn't know what it's getting over the 3 years. Most public bodies don't know what they're getting over a 3 year period, but RTE is getting these guarantees, and there will then be a drive to ensure that RTE pays for itself within those parameters. And the government will also be pushing to ensure that licence fees are paid. Fionn Sheehan writing on the inside of the Independent there, and that's a story that we'll be talking an awful lot about, I suspect, in the coming weeks and indeed months. On Postis to receive €6 million over a three-year period to begin better collection and enforcement measures for the licence, and the Post Office is going to be incentivised to collect more revenue. The collection of the TV licence by revenue commissioners has been ruled out, and it's also been confirmed the cost of a TV licence will remain at €1.60. Irish Times this morning, former Ku Klux Klan leader is among those mentoring Irish far-right extremists online, according to a story by Conor Gallagher on the front of the Irish Times. Frank L. Silva, who also goes by the name Frank De Silva, was a prominent figure in the US white supremacist movement in the 80s, as well as being the leader of the Los Angeles chapter of the Ku Klux Klan and a Grand Dragon. He was a founding member of the Order, a neo-Nazi terror group that carried out a string of violent crimes across the US before being dismantled by the FBI. Also, statutory inquiry into sex abuse in schools proposed. A scoping report has been initiated on the back of allegations of sexual abuse at Black Rock College in Dublin. And looking inside the Times again, that RTE story, they're to get 725 million over the next 3 years. New court service figures, Mary Carlin tells us, show the court system isn't receiving adequate state funding to employ the number of staff it needs to ensure the effective administration of justice, according to ATD. And you'd have heard, of course, with Michaela on the news that there are protests taking place outside courts today. And that's just one element of the pressure on a system which is said to be creaking. And that, I think, is something we're going to be hearing more and more about again in the coming weeks and months. The funding of the court system. Now we're heading into the summer recess in the court system, as we are elsewhere. But certainly there's going to be more talk, I think, about that and the need for more funding for that court system. Looking at the insight of the Irish Daily Mail and some interesting comments coming from Sinn Féin. It's been doing a lot of soul searching and internal reviewing on the back of the poor performance nationally by the party in the local and European elections. Performance in Donegal, they remained strong and retained what they had, but not a great performance by the party nationally. And one of the comments made in a press conference that refugee schemes are now a perverse incentive for landlords, and claims for an €800 tax-free payment to accommodate Ukrainians have doubled in the past year to over 14,000 recipients. That raises concerns that it's creating what Sinn Féin are referring to as a perverse incentive for landlords. There are over 14,000 claiming that accommodation recognition payment, that tax-free payment that people get from housing Ukrainian refugees in their properties. And yesterday we heard figures, astronomical figures, being paid to centres and their owners who are accommodating refugees, particularly coming from Romania. Also, place asylum seekers in centres in better off areas, says Mary Lou. The Sinn Féin leader admitting that the party hasn't listened to its core voters, and that was one of the fanfares we heard a lot in the wake of the elections last month. Accommodation centres for asylum seekers should be located in better off areas. The leader of Sinn Féin said that the site in Coolock in North Dublin, which has become the focus of violent disorder after it was earmarked as a refugee centre, shouldn't have been chosen by government. Ms McDonald said the site wouldn't have been chosen by a Sinn Féin-led government because the area cannot support it. Would you place this centre in one of the most deprived communities in the state? She asked. No, you wouldn't. Would you attempt to do that with no regard to that reality and no consultation with the community living there? She asked. No, you wouldn't. And that's Mary Lou McDonald nailing her colours to the mast there with regards to what the Sinn Féin policy on this issue is going to be looking forward. Irish Daily Star this morning. A trial is told about a Garda's story about an alleged sexual assault in a station, and it was like badly written erotica, and several papers carrying that quota. It's a Garda at the centre of an accusation that he sexually assaulted a woman at a station. Told the court she showed him raunchy photographs of herself and made suggestion comments. However, the prosecution claimed that the version given by Garda William Ryan was like, as we said, badly written erotica. On the inside of the Star, a call online for Brave Pal Marathon run in honour of Warrior Emma. The superstar actor Colin Farrell is running the Dublin Marathon to help a close friend who suffers from an agonising skin disorder. The Castleknock star will take on the challenge to honour Pal Emma Fogarty, who is Ireland's longest survivor of a rare genetic condition called epidermolysis bullosa. And she's hit her 40th birthday, which not many people with that condition do. And to mark that, Colin Farrell is to run the marathon in her honour. Fair play to Colin. Looking at the front of the Irish Daily Mirror, again, it's the RTE TV licensing story. Looking on the inside, that Sinn Féin story again, put asylum centres in better off areas. And the bad erotica story, Irish woman hit in Peru, hit and run, crash horror. You'll have heard that particular story on the news with Michaela as well this morning. And on the Irish Sun, GAA Mad Harry has been to 64 All-Ireland finals, but he's got no ticket for Sunday's game. Up for the match is the headline. And, you know, we get this story every year in some form that someone that's been to 150 All-Ireland finals over the course of their lifetime can't get a ticket this year. They go to a paper, the paper prints a big front page story, and lo and behold, a ticket emerges. And my prediction is that Harry Smith, 81, he's only missed three showpiece events since his first in 56. I'm told there is a man in Donegal, he said, who's been at 74 matches. I'm hoping to make it to 65 anyway. So we're told Donegal may have the record with someone in the county having attended 74 All-Ireland finals, but Harry hoping to make it 65 this year. That is an interesting one indeed. Now we're going to go to Niamh King, who is an administrator with FIC. Niamh, good morning to you.
Morning.
Niamh, you have a daughter who has a visual impairment, and sometimes it can be difficult in a situation like that to help a child make sense of their surroundings. And one of the things that's been announced this week is that Barbie are making two additions to their growing line of diverse and inclusive dolls. They're bringing out the very first blind Barbie, and as well the first black Barbie with Down syndrome, but a blind Barbie. What difference is that going to make to your daughter, do you believe?
I think for any child, or I suppose adult, with a visual impairment, I think seeing or interacting people just like you, in inverted commas, is really important when you're a minority of any age or stage. Knowing you're not the only person in your community, knowing you're not the only person what might feel like in the world that looks like you or has your issues, I think is really important for confidence.
In terms of the condition she has, if you don't mind speaking about it, does she have any sight? Is she totally blind, or is it just an impairment? Where does she sit on the spectrum?
So it would be an impairment. Yeah. So she has albinism. The old term would have been albino or albino. Yeah. So she looks different as well to the average child in her class, for example. She would have very pale hair. She's very pale skin. Yeah. She uses a cane, just like Barbie. So she, I suppose, her vision best described would be very blurry all the time. So what a vision impairment is your eyes aren't working correctly and glasses don't fix that. Yeah. That's the difference between if I wore a pair of glasses, it would fix it.
Yeah.
So she is permanently blurry. She can see there's a human in front of her, but she couldn't make out their face or a logo on their clothes, for example.
Yeah. Can she read?
She can in about 30 size font. Her school books will be that big,
I have a family member, actually, who has a visual impairment, and they're in exactly the same position. Their computer screen is a 78-inch TV, and they read in 36-point font. And, you know,
So 36 would be, her comfortable. She can probably go down to the high 20s, but comfortably, but then that makes school books, in junior school anyway, quite an issue. They're huge.
Oh, I've been there, done that, as the man said. We had an entire drawer full of them. Matt's took up an entire sort of section of a bookcase. So I know exactly where you're coming from on that one. It is important, because particularly when someone has that condition in early life, it's hard enough to come to terms with the world. It's hard enough to grow up and to make sense of the world around you. And when you are, as you've said, perceptively different, it's that little bit much harder. So you believe it is going to be a confidence boost to your daughter and others to actually be able to play with a toy that's like them. Because one of the big sort of complaints about Barbie over the years, traditionally, particularly when I was young, there was one Barbie, and it was a Barbie that was supposedly perfect. Now, I once read, actually, someone said that if there was a woman proportioned in the same way that Barbie was proportioned initially, they would be constantly falling over, because it made no actual scientific or biological sense to have the proportions Barbie had. Yeah. If you had that body and those legs, you were going to be falling over all the time. So Barbie has gone, it seems, from being a completely unrealistic model to something that's actually becoming more and more inclusive.
Yeah, and I think as well, not only inclusive, but like I said, the representation, that if you see positive representation, it will develop confidence and self-esteem, you know, and that Barbie is so famous for being successful and perfect and happy. You know, her life would be perfect and happy and successful. But then also, like that, if someone goes on a play date to a friend's house and they're playing with the doll, with a cane, with a wheelchair, with a hearing aid, it just makes it quite normal, for want of a better word. So then when they see people walking down the street with a cane, it's not like these people have landed from another planet. They have seen this before, and it's just normal. Same when there's a character on television, RT has a visually impaired character in one, RT Junior. You know, it's just average. And this isn't just for a blind child to play with or a visually impaired child to play with. It's for any child to play with, because there are visually impaired people around. And actually, Donegal would have a very high ratio compared to any other county. So it should just be normal, because it is just normal.
I'll tell you a story that I've always loved. When my children were younger, and I'm going back many, many years, when they were much younger, there was a lad they knew in town who spoke using a voice box. He had issues with his vocal cords, and he actually spoke using a voice box. And one day, the kid shouted out, "Mommy, Daddy, quick, quick, come in. There's a fella on the telly talking like Alan."
Yeah.
It was Stephen Hawking.
Okay.
And that was how they interpreted Stephen
yeah.
Hawking. Stephen Hawking was the guy who was talking like the lad they knew in town.
Yeah.
Which I mean,
and
that says it, I think, because it was, to them, it was just totally normal because they knew
absolutely.
Him, you know, and that was, and as you say, it the other way around then, when they have a toy, and that's an interesting element of it. It's important for your daughter that she has a toy that represents her, but also important that others perhaps are going to be playing with a toy that normalizes her in their eyes, because she is an absolutely, I mean, and I hate the word normal anyway, but she is an absolutely normal member of, she's in her class, she plays, she has, you know, she has the same feelings, the same wants, the same desires, the same interests, I'm sure. She loves Taylor Swift just like everybody else her age, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah.
So, and from that point of view, she's like them in every other way, and now they have a toy that's, you know, bringing her condition into their worldview as well.
Yes, and like you said about the person in your neighbourhood, when we started in, we're finishing up primary school shortly, but when we started, I obviously looked at schools that really wanted her and were inclusive and what have you, and were willing to adapt with all her technology and what have you. And actually, it was one of the parents saying, it's not just it's a good school for her. She thinks it's wonderful the other children are being educated with an inverted commas different child. It has never been asked. We have never had a question from any child in that school over 7 years about Leisha. They have just taken her because that's all they know from the age of four, and the little ones coming up behind her. That's all they know. And so, you know, we never get questions, looks. No one is you know, it really, if anything, it comes from adults. So children just accept. And I think the more normalized these things become, the better for when they're adults and then they're teaching their children these things are just average and they're everywhere. And these people are the same as us and they're everywhere.
Absolutely. Talk to us about FAIC, the organisation that you're an administrator with, because it's important that organisations like that do exist to provide various supports. It's very important, you know, I mean, and FAIC is an organisation that helps people, obviously, with visual impairments. But tell us about the work that FAIC does.
So FAIC was started maybe 30, 40 years ago, just as a parent support group. And then during COVID, obviously, the volunteers had a lot more time on their hands. And everyone was jumping onto Zoom and Teams and things like that. So we formalized, we became a company. Then last year we became a charity. We support the parents. So we don't support the children with visual impairment. We support the parents. We offer webinars. We have guides of what to do when your child is diagnosed, what to do when your child is starting school, etc. So we offer four webinars during the year that are free for anyone to come and listen to. We offer guides that are free. And then the one thing that comes up again and again is education. It's parents' biggest concern is all the different aspects that come with schooling for a child with a visual impairment. And there's an awful lot of organisations kind of involved in that. You have the Visiting Teacher Service, you have Vision Ireland, you have Child Vision. But we come in from the parents' point of view and the lived experience point of view. You know, what someone on paper might think is a great idea, in practice actually doesn't work for the child or the teenager. So we would advocate a lot on behalf of families. We advocate to the larger organisations. We have worked with the exam board and things for Leaving Cert and Junior Cert exams. We would give advice to parents. We would have equal numbers of teachers and SNAs on our mailing list to parents, which just shows how interested and how much teachers and SNAs want to help
and want to
learn.
And important too that you are liaising with people like the exams board and with the department, because when it comes to decisions about supports that are being offered, arrangements being put in place for exams, whether it be extra time, whether it be a separate room, whether it be a reader or whatever,
to be practical.
That, you know, it's got to be. Yeah. And there is no way, you know, And we always talk about decisions made in offices in Dublin by people who don't understand what happens on the ground. It's vital in this instance that a decision is made with the input of people like yourselves who can say, well, look, this is the lived experience of parents, this is the lived experience of the pupils and the students and the children, and this is what's necessary in order to give them the best possible chance they can. Because when it comes to exams, what you're basically saying is you're going to ask them the same questions, you're going to treat them exactly the same as everybody else, but to treat them the same as everybody else, you've got to give them some specific supports. It's not a matter of giving them an advantage. It's a matter of making them equal.
Absolutely, yes. And I think that's where FAIC maybe stands out compared to the other organisations, is we're very much the lived experience. I mean, the parents are living with these people with visual impairment for at least 18 years of their lives. So we really do have a kind of a different perspective.
It's an important one, and I want to give a shout out too, because there is an organisation in Donegal called the Lottie Dolls Company, which has been making inclusive dolls and various dolls for years. And I think it would be just when we're talking about Barbie's advancements, just want to acknowledge that the Lottie Dolls Company in Donegal has been doing this sort of thing for years too. And I just want to acknowledge that. Niamh, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. We wish Leigh and yourself all the best, and may her. Did you say she's just going into secondary school now this year?
One more year to go.
One more year to go. Well, may the end of primary and her journey into secondary be an easy one and a fulfilling one, and all the best to you and to her.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you very much indeed. That is the new blind Barbie that has been introduced onto the market, and that was Niamh King, an administrator with FAIC. And now, caller is a comment. Donal, you might not like the term plantation, but it's an accurate description of the government's current policy. Proper consultation should include a referendum. Now, this plantation idea, or as some people try to make it, a replacement, there is a theory that suggests that indigenous local people are to be replaced across Europe by others, and that's going to create a Muslim Europe. I'm sorry, I don't buy that one for a moment. Plantation. The problem with the term plantation is that in Irish history in particular, the plantation was a very, very deliberate attempt to displace indigenous populations and replace them with others from elsewhere. I do not believe that there is any such deliberate policy taking place at the moment. I really don't believe there is a deliberate policy. I believe what's happening is there are people trying to do the right thing, and in some cases they're making a total hames of it. But I do not for one moment believe that there is plantation happening. That's my own personal view. If you take a contrary view, please do let us know. Choruses just want to drop a quick message to let you know, well done to the lifeguards on duty at Marble Hill Beach in Dunfanaghy yesterday. A young girl got into trouble, and due to the fast actions of the lifeguards, a nurse who happened to be on the beach, and some members of the public, they were undoubtedly able to save this young girl's life. My thoughts and prayers are with the young girl who had to be taken away by ambulance and her family. Not all heroes wear capes. Some wear red shorts and yellow t-shirts. Absolutely, and echo that 100%. Lifeguards on beaches, they are always there, and we just look at them and we take them for granted, and they stand in the corner and we will look at them and we'll make Baywatch jokes and we'll get on with our day and they'll get on with their watching and their observation, and something mightn't happen from one end of the season to the other, but when something did happen, they were there, they were ready. And it is looking, from what our caller is saying, that a life was saved yesterday in Dunfanaghy, and that is wonderful to be able to report. It's the 9 till noon show, 31 minutes past 9. We'll take a short break. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Now, you'll have heard last week that Fianna Fáil had nominations for the forthcoming selection convention in the county, with speculation growing of a general election in early November. Now, one of the candidates who has expressed an interest is Ben Harkin from Termon, who's involved in Ógra Fianna Fáil, and Ben joins us in studio this morning. Ben, good morning.
Donal, thanks very much for having me. Delighted to be here.
It's a pleasure having you. Now, you work in analysis in Letterkenny, and you're an author. You've always been interested in politics. Tell us about your political priorities.
My political priorities, I suppose, like I say, so I'm an analyst for an energy company, and energy is something that I've been working on and thinking on for a very long time. energy is something that's very important in Donegal. We're one of the top producers of wind energy in the country. But we actually lost about 20% of our wind energy that we produced last year because we don't have the infrastructure to move it and store it. So, you know, we're wasting cheap electricity while businesses and families are crippled with energy costs. And that's something that I feel very passionate about. I think that we need to get housing built in Donegal. We need to get infrastructure built to connect Donegal. I think that Donegal has received a massive amount of investment. It's grown massively in the last few years. And I think that it's still lagging behind in a couple of the key economic metrics that we look at. And I think it's time for maybe a refocus on economic growth in the county to take it up to where it should be.
You're an author as well. You've written Time Nor Tide, Ireland and Climate Change. So obviously that follows on from that interest in energy. And you've put your views down in book form.
Yeah, I have. So that was in 2020. I was in college, and when COVID hit, then I came back home and I started writing that there. And that was a fantastic process because I suppose it allows you to put your thoughts to paper. And it's very clarifying, actually, to write that down. It's a great opportunity to talk to people that are working in the space, that are researching in the space. And I got a fantastic response from the book. And I think that it told me that, you know, we hear a lot that rural Ireland's very disconnected. It's all an inner city thing, a Green Party thing in Dublin. And that's not true. I think people are very passionate about it. I think that people can see the impacts, you know, especially in agriculture in Donegal. Yeah. And I think that it's talking about then, you know, being part of that response. And Donegal is part of that response. You know, we're definitely doing our part in it.
Is there a false narrative being created on the basis that the perception is, and you've put it very succinctly there already, but the perception would be that there will automatically be opposition in a place like Donegal to measures to counter climate change because the perception is going to be too much is being asked of farmers. And it's always couched in very black and white terms, very much Dublin versus Donegal, whereas the actual truth is probably far more nuanced.
100%. Well, if you look at the past few years, like the only sector where there's been significant emission reductions is in agriculture. And then when you talk about, you know, wind energy, which is doing a lot of the heavy lifting in the electricity side, that's all coming from Donegal, from Mayo, Galway, all these West Coast rural counties, you know. So I think that the idea that it isn't, you know, that it isn't a rural thing, it's definitely, you know, rural counties are definitely doing their part and more, you know, and reducing our emissions.
You have the expertise and the knowledge and the interest in climate change and climate issues. Obviously, they're going to be huge issues in the coming years and decades indeed. Mm-hmm. In terms of your interest in politics, you're involved in Ogra Fianna Fáil and you studied politics in school, and indeed the fact that politics was available as a subject was one of the reasons you actually chose to go to St. Eunan's in Letterkenny.
Yeah, so I was actually in Mulrough College for 4 years and I had a great time there. And then when I got to Leavenshurst, St. Eunan's College had politics and society as a subject. It was something I was really interested in studying, so I moved to study that and study physics. And I had a great time for them 2 years in St. Eunan's College. And that was a great subject. I'd actually encourage anyone to study it just to learn, I suppose, more about how the world works and how these decisions are made. But yeah, I learned a lot from that there, and that was another part, you know, of my interest developing.
Why did you choose Fianna Fáil?
Well, so it's always political, but I suppose I wouldn't really be from a political family or anything. And then I went to college. I was in Queens, and I met a fellow from Donegal, Michael Sweeney from Fannett, actually, and he was part of Ogra Fianna Fáil, and he told me to start coming to a few meetings and that. And I didn't. I really enjoyed the discussion in that, and I suppose, you know, Fianna Fáil is a big tent. There's a lot of different, you know, a lot of different opinions in that, and there was in their meetings, but I really enjoyed it. And I think what's very important is the democracy within it. You know, so I'm young, but, you know, my name is in the hat for the general election. And that's, I think, the best part of it, Fianna Fáil, that, you know, you have an opportunity to have democracy within the party.
As you say, your name is in the hat. Now, let's look at the names, because, you know, this is a formidable list. You've got Minister Charlie McConnellog, a sitting minister in government. You've got Senator Niall Blaney, a former TD. You've got Pat the Cope Gallagher, a former junior minister, a former Las Concorda, and served as a TD and an MEP for decades in this county. You've got Donal Mandy Kelly, sitting councillor in Letterkenny, who topped the poll, if I recall correctly, in the Letterkenny electoral area. And you've got Councillor Micheál Nocton, who, again, if I'm correct, did he top the poll in the Donegal electoral area, or was it Noel Jordan topped the poll? I think it may have been Micheál topped the poll there, actually. It was either Micheál or Noel. I can't remember which, to be honest, and apologies to both. But, I mean, you know, they are, and it's probably fair to say that in terms of, certainly from our point of view on Highland Radio News and on this programme, the least known name in that list is yours.
Yeah, well, listen, I don't think there'll be too many people putting any money on me in the bookies now, but I suppose when I decided before the nominations came out that this was something that I was going to do, and then I was sort of caught in the back foot. It came out sort of all of a sudden, and when it did come out, people in the party, you know, particularly in Ogre Fianna Fáil, approached me and told me to put my name in. And when it became public that the nominations were open, people outside the party, you know, as well, said put my name in. So, listen, I got nominated, and I was delighted to accept that nomination. And that's what this is about. It gives an opportunity, I think, for the party to show the enthusiasm, our policies, and then, you know, we can, the party members, then it's up to them to decide who they want. But I don't think, I think as well, it is important. I think people, I've got a very positive response. I think people are looking for new energy, for fresh faces, and I think that young people are delighted to see, you know, them being represented as well.
Mm-hmm. How do you now go about gathering support? Because the other area you have do have a slight disadvantage is if you go to anyone in any Curlic Hunter in Donegal within Fianna Fáil, you say the word Cope, they know exactly who you're talking about. They know exactly. You say Nocton, you say Blaney. I mean, there's pedigree there, there's heritage there, there's history there. You now face the challenge of going to Curlicanther, and perhaps you're going to have to go to Curlicanther. Presumably you're going to have to go from Manninhead down as far as Lahey, because, you know, there's, it's a huge county, and if you were to garner support, you've got to really put your name out there. How do you go about that? Can you go from Curlicanther to Curlicanther, meeting to meeting, stating your case? Do you get a chance? Is there a hustings you can use? What is the process?
Yeah, so I haven't been told of any hustings, but I suppose you get a membership list, and you can use that then to communicate with members, especially, I suppose, maybe potential people that might vote for you. But what I'm interested in is putting forward the policies that I want for Donegal, and I'm talking about these things, you know, my energy policies. I want to talk about kickstarting economic growth and getting businesses built in Donegal, and then it's up to people to decide. And I think that a problem that Donegal can have, and this is among all parties, is that we can focus a little bit too much on the local issues. I want to talk about the bigger issues that are facing Donegal this year. This, you know, the fact that we are lagging behind, and then it's up to them, the people within the party, to decide after that. There, when we have a selection convention in the next couple of weeks,
you didn't contest the recent local elections. Is that something you might look at in the future? Look at a local election before a general election. Get your name established locally, or is this something that you're going to think of? Okay, I'm going to establish my name now. Get my name known. Start the process of, you know, the campaigning around the Curlicanther and the members, and then maybe for the convention, in assuming the next government goes full term, there'll be another convention, presumably in early to mid 2029, and maybe look toward then. Or would we be seeing your name potentially crop up elsewhere?
Well, the first thing to say, I suppose, is that the Milford area, which I'm a part of, has a Fianna Fáil councillor in Liam Blaney. Mm-hmm. And Liam has shown through what he's delivered in the area and the vote that he's got that he is a very strong mandate in that their area, you know. So I don't think that, I think me putting my name forward there, I don't think that, you know, that would have benefited the area this time. But, you know, you never know what can happen in 5 years. That's something that I'll definitely be considering. And the policies that I'm talking about here in energy and housing and that, I'm not just saying them, I suppose, to try and get elected. These are something that I want to get enacted, whether that's through, you know, being on the general election ticket, or whether that's within Ogre Fianna Fáil or Fianna Fáil in the years to come as well, that's going to be stuff that I am working on, regardless, you know, of elected or not.
What's your perception about where things are going in national politics? Because we were told a year ago that next government would be Sinn Féin led, Mary Lou McDonald Taoiseach. It's a slam dunk. Then Micheál Martin at the time would have been very much taking the line, I will not go into coalition with Sinn Féin, I will not go into coalition with Sinn Féin, I will not go into coalition with Sinn Féin. We're now at the point where the Sinn Féin support, according to the latest polls, appears to be going down. The Sinn Féin performance in the local elections wasn't as strong as they would have hoped. And the prospect of the current government, or a variation thereof, being returned after the next election is being talked about now as a much more realistic project and prospect than it was being spoken about even a year ago, 18 months ago. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so, and you know, the way it'll probably go is people say, oh, the next government now is going to get returned, and then probably coming up to the elections then that'll all change. Like, there's no certainties in politics. We've seen that there, you know, things can change so quickly. I think that people in Fianna Fáil have said for years that the polls underrepresented where we are, that it didn't represent what people were hearing on the doors. And I think that the local elections show that there, that we got a far stronger vote nationally than people were expecting. I think that this government has delivered. I think that, that people are seeing that there, and we're seeing that now in the poll numbers, and I think we're seeing a change of momentum, and it's all, you know, it's all about momentum in politics, really, and that there, I think, now has swung to the government. So it's, you know, I suppose it's going to be up now to see when the general election's called.
One of the interesting things would have been that for, shall we say, older persons like myself, I mean, I would recall a model of Fianna Fáil that was very traditional, very much based on family history, that was, you vote that way because your father voted that way, because your grandfather voted that way, because all your uncles voted that way, and your family votes that way, and you live in a Fianna Fáil house. Now, from what you're saying, you're completely different to that. You have joined Fianna Fáil as a decision made following conversations with a friend, so you don't have that same, shall we say, emotional ties to a history of Fianna Fáil and a traditional Fianna Fáil that others would have. Would you find it easier to, say, consider going into coalition with someone like Sinn Féin or going into other arrangements than someone that was brought up steeped in Fianna Fáil?
Yeah, so I think that there's a great benefit, firstly, to, you know, to maybe coming into the party from a bit of an outsider. I think that, you know, sometimes maybe if you're steeped in it, you can have maybe some of the blind spots, you know, from the history in that. I believe in being in power, you know, and I think that Fianna Fáil naturally sees itself as being in the party of power, because you can't deliver for people if you're not, and Fianna Fáil is a party that has delivered for people in the last 2 years. So, you know, you just have to wait till the general election. You have to see who gets the mandate from the people, and you can only make a decision there. But yeah, you know, I would definitely be more open to it. But again, that all comes down to what the Irish people, who they vote for, you know, your decision is kind of made there.
How big a change, and maybe it's something that we haven't fully analysed yet, how big a change for the party was it to go into coalition with Fine Gael? Because, I mean, I can certainly remember a time that there was more chance of Errigal erupting as a volcano than there was of Fianna Fáil going into coalition with Fine Gael.
Yeah.
I mean, for someone like yourself, who again, as we say, wasn't steeped in the old Civil War politics, wasn't steeped in that, and I mean, and I'm sure there were some Fianna Fáil stalwarts alive and dead were spinning in their graves or were holding their heads in their hands thinking the world has just come to an end when that initial coalition between Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin and Eamon Ryan was announced. From the internal, I mean, and from someone who's within Fianna Fáil, what's the view in the party now? Has sort of, to use the old William Butler Yeats quote, you know, has everything changed utterly since that deal between Martin and Varadkar?
Well, I suppose I don't like using the phrase because maybe it does remind people of my youth, but that idea that, you know, it could never happen is before my time, I suppose. But yeah, like when it did happen, you know, I think the reaction, especially within Ogra Fianna Fáil, wasn't particularly happy. You know, I think that they did see each other maybe as natural adversities.
Yeah.
But I think that the stronger than expected result in the local elections and the shift in momentum towards the government has shown people within the party and outside the party that this is a government that's worked together very well, you know, and I think that this is a government that's delivered for people. And I think that that's what's important to party members in the end up, you know, that the history, while it is important, you have to deliver for people today, and that's what the party is doing right now, and that's what's important.
Did it also highlight the perception that when it actually comes to policy, when it comes to political philosophy, there isn't all that much difference between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael? Both are centrist parties in terms of their economic views. Fianna Fáil possibly slightly leaning toward the left, slightly more focused on social issues. Fine Gael arguably slightly leaning toward the right, maybe slightly leaning toward business, stroke, market economy, things like that. But a huge amount of similarity in the middle, to the extent that politically, when you take away the Civil War politics, and when you take away the history and the adversity and the animosity of the past, it actually did make perfect political sense for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael to coalesce.
Yes, well, so the parties are, you know, distinctly different, and you know, that was discussed at the McGill Summer School. You know, Mary Coughlin was saying that, you know, what she felt would be discussed at a branch meeting would be different to a common meeting. And that is reflected then in the national, I suppose, alignments of the party. And we've seen that there in the European Parliament votes as well. You know, they do vote differently. But I think that what it does reflect mostly is that the Irish, you know, the Irish voting population, I think, is generally a centrist voting population. And we don't have the sort of big swings that you might see in other countries. I think what people want is generally stability, you know, and they want governments that delivered and that's what they give this government the mandate to do. You know, so isn't it? It's been a government that's worked very well together. People want governments that they can go the full term and deliver in that time, and that's what this government's done.
Two quick final questions. Do you have a date for the convention yet?
No. No, I haven't. No, I was told next week, but I think now it could be the week after that now. But no, I haven't been told a specific date or anything.
And the big question, when's the election?
Oh, well, listen, the government's going the full term. That's yeah. That's what we've been told, and that's what that's all I've heard.
Do people actually believe that?
Well, listen, that's...
The perception is it's going to be probably the first or second week in November, probably November 14th. There's very few people, in fairness, there's very few people believe it's going to go through to February or March.
Yeah, well, yeah, listen, very few people do. Again, I was at the McGill Summer School and that question was asked, and I think the entirety of the room put their hands up for November, but there's been no indication anyway. I've heard absolutely nothing anyway. I'd, of course, tell you if I heard anything.
Oh, you would, of course. I know. Ben, you know what? You're learning fast. Ben Harkin, listen, thanks indeed for coming to speak to us this morning.
You.
Absolutely. We wish you all the best in the convention, as you've said, and you've acknowledged it yourself. You're up against some big heavyweights there. It's going to be an uphill battle, but the impression you're giving me is that you're up for it.
Of course, I have to be.
Ben, thank you. All the best. Just a few quick comments before we move on. Delighted to see youth going forward. Unfortunately, it'll be the same old men clinging to power and not a female in sight. Who still votes for these old cronies? And another caller says, I can't believe that RTE have been granted such a huge amount of money, considering the amount of mismanagement of funds which have come to light recently. The defective block families are suffering with no real solutions. We've been thrown a half-working scheme with no real enthusiasm to make it better because the powers that be are not affected. It's an absolute scandal. Ryan Tuberty's lack of ability to get a job in his own country proved that the belief in their own self-value was overrated. And thanks for your comments, and please keep them coming. You'll have heard on the news with Michaela earlier that there are homes and businesses in Bomini and Letterkenny that have been without water for at least 5 days. Councillor Donal Mandy Kelly told a special housing meeting of Donegal County Council that while he welcomes confirmation of an additional 100 social housing units to be delivered in Ballymacool by 2026, utilities must be repaired and water supplies must be guaranteed. Councillor Donal Mandy Kelly joins us online. Donal, good morning.
Good morning, Donal. Good morning to all your listeners there.
Donal, this is an issue that's been discussed in the past in terms of this. We've been there before. Uisce Éireann and the need to ensure that water supplies are available. You're saying it's important the Ballymacool work gets done. It's important other housing projects get developed and as quickly as possible. But it's also vital that there is adequate infrastructure provided and that there's improvement to the existing infrastructure to make sure that Letterkenny can take it.
Yeah, that's correct, Donal. Listen, we're all aware that we're in a housing crisis at the minute, and I'm by no means against building houses. I'm all for building houses, but just exactly what you've said, Don. You know, I brought it forward yesterday at a special housing meeting in relation to the houses, the construction of houses at Ballymacool, and you know, I asked the executives directly what consultation they had to date with Uisce Éireann in relation to the adequate infrastructure going on. And the reason that I've asked that, Donal, is because of what you've outlined. I've been lobbying now for the last number of years, maybe 2 years, in relation to water outages and no water pressure in Bomini, New Mills and Tully Gay areas. You know, and you know, we're talking now the first phase of this Ballymacool construction of excess of 100 houses. You know, and unless the adequate infrastructure is put in place first before there's a sod turned to the ground here, we're only going to be adding to the problem that's already there, and it's going to make it 10 times worse. And that's something I don't want to see happening, Donald. And I've asked that the council focus on consulting with Uisce Éireann to ensure the proper infrastructure is put in place. Because, you know, as you stated there, Donald, and Bomini and Tully Gay there alone, they've had no water since Friday. You know, and that's right up until today. You know, and it's totally unacceptable. And, you know, I was given a commitment from Uisce Éireann that the new mains infrastructure works was to be carried out in the fourth quarter of 2024. It was then delayed to quarter two of 2024. And there's still nothing happening on the ground, you know, and it's simply not on. And in relation to myself making contact with Uisce Éireann on behalf of my constituents and the residents in these areas, I can't get through, you know. I'm getting through, surely, but I'm getting the same old response all the time, and I'm getting no answers, you know. And to be quite honest, all, I'm absolutely fed up about the stage, you know, and so is the residents, yeah. And rightly so.
Well, we know, that the whole issue of communication between Uisce Éireann and members of Donegal County Council, it's been one of those live issues on the agenda now for years, right through the last council term and before. We do know that council was briefed this week that Uisce Éireann are planning to do a big meeting with members in Lifford later in the year. But the point's been made that this isn't going to address this ongoing complaint that members have, that when it comes to getting questions about issues like the Bomini issue, like the issues around Tullygay, and issues around Manor as well, where you've been very vocal, that it's just not possible to get through and that needs to change. It would appear they're sort of throwing a bone to Donegal County Council, but they're not addressing the core issue.
Absolutely, you're exactly right. They only hit the nail on the head. And, you know, I've been calling now for a number of years for a face-to-face meeting with Uisce Éireann. And I even have travelled myself personally to Tuam, and I've travelled further afield as well to meet the Uisce Éireann because they wouldn't come to us as a council. And now, they did come last year where we sat down around the table, but the adequate time we're given isn't enough to us. I mean, I talk about locally there, New Mills, Bomini, Tullygay and Manor Cunningham as well, where the works is finally continuing. But even Manor had two busts there in the last week as well, you know. And I feel that there's not enough been done here. And you're right, you know, Uisce Éireann is to meet us now. I think it's sometime in September they're setting a date. And, you know, what they've asked for is a two-hour meeting. It's a two-day meeting. We would need them done at this stage, you know, the way they're carrying on. And, you know, 2 hours is not near adequate enough to for every councillor, not just myself, but for every elected member to raise the issues that they have within their own areas on behalf of their constituents. You know, it's just simply not good enough.
In terms of the council's response to you, and very often when questions now are raised about Uisce Éireann and so on, the actual response that comes back tends to be along the lines of Donegal County Council has no competency in this issue. We have to ask Uisce Éireann and we'll pass on that question to them. Are you getting any indication from the council that Uisce Éireann are engaging with them and that there will be some movement on this?
No, listen, Donald, I'm getting the same automated response as any other individual that's emailing Uisce Éireann or contacting them. We get an automated response. And listen, I believe, and I said it yesterday as well, that our own local authority needs to be doing more on this as well. Because, you know, I have been ringing our own local authority in relation to getting answers, and I'm not getting it there either. And, you know, that's not good enough, Donald, you know. I was elected by the people to represent the people to the best of my ability, you know, and I'm doing my part. And I think it's long overdue that the council and Uisce Éireann, yeah, that all our executives, once I make a phone call, that should they not be able to answer to the time, you know, that they ring back and give me the answer that I'm looking for that I can go back to and give to my constituents. Because as I said, Donald, they are fed up. They are at their wits' end. I mean, there's families there, Donald, that couldn't even get clothes washed, you know, couldn't get their children washed there for 5, going on 6 days now, you know. This is simply not good enough. You know, it's gone beyond a joke at this stage, you know?
Yeah. In terms of the future, I mean, you need these guarantees. The council is moving on with its plans to develop these houses in Ballymacool. Your fear, as you've indicated, your fear is that if we don't get proper confirmation that the water pressure is going to be available and that the work's going to be done, we don't know where we stand in terms of water supplies in Letterkenny into the future.
Yeah, that's correct, Donald. I mean, it's adding to the problem. And I want to state it clearly, Donald. I'm not against development, but we have to have the proper infrastructure in place before we continue developing, because there's no point adding to the problems that's already there. Like, I tabled a motion there too in relation to, on Tuesday at our MD meeting, in relation to the carriageway from the O'Donnell Park into Letterkenny, asking that Donegal County Council seek funding and come up with a plan to have to improve the carriageway in, to have adequate footpaths and adequate cycle lane going on. Now, I'm glad to have seen that there is a project and now put in place and was open to public consultation on Tuesday as well in relation to this. So, listen, I'm delighted to see there's progress been made.